Welcome to this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane, here with our host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. And Doctor, we are honored to be joined today by really one of the most brilliant minds in this country to discuss a crucial issue affecting our nation today.
And he's one of my very good friends and a man that I respect highly. Luann and Ryan, it is no secret to any of us that the American way of life, such as it's been known for generations, is under attack today. Mm-hmm. At least that's what we believe. The Judeo-Christian system of values on which this country and truly much of Western civilization have been founded are threatened on a number of different fronts. And to help us discuss this and uncover some of the threats to these values and ideas, I've invited a man, again, that I think has no peer in discussing these kinds of issues and many others. Rabbi Daniel Lappin is with us today, and I think, Luann, you gave him a wonderful description. He is brilliant, and as such is known worldwide as America's rabbi. In fact, in 2007, Newsweek magazine included him in a list of America's 50 most influential rabbis. He studied the Torah, physics, economics, and mathematics in Johannesburg, London, and Jerusalem. He is a frequent speaker for hundreds of groups, including the Family Research Council, the Heritage Foundation, Voices United for Israel, along with many others. And his first book, America's Real War, was a national bestseller. And I think some of the ideas expressed in that book have appeared in his subsequent writings, and we're going to talk about them today. He's encouraged Americans to re-embrace the Judeo-Christian system of values on which it's founded. And that is, again, what we want to talk about today. Rabbi Lappin and his wife Susan have seven children, all of them grown, and they homeschooled them all. How come, Rabbi? Why did you choose to homeschool your children?
First of all, Dr. Dobson, thank you very much indeed for not only the gracious introduction, but indeed for your hospitality. It's an honor, and it's wonderful for us to be together again and to spend this little while together with you and with Ryan and Luann. Thanks to you all. And in answer to the homeschooling, the way we figured it, Dr. Dobson, was that the greatest investment that Susan and I make is into our children, into our family. And we realized that sending them off for the best part of every day to fall under the influence of a system that is fundamentally spreading the sordid stain of secularism, essentially a public educational system that that has as its one of its prime purposes the obliteration of faith. That seemed to me to be an incredibly self-destructive act after we invested so much of ourselves, of our time and our love and our energies and our resources into these children. We just decided we didn't want to do that, and we decided to keep them home. It turned out to be a great blessing for us because the added joy and vitality and passion they injected into every day just by their rambunctious presence made it such that, frankly, to this day, I find it very difficult to write in a silent house. And so I need to go to a coffee shop or somewhere where there's a hubbub of people to attempt to replicate my most productive time.
Well, you can come over and see Ryan and write over there.
I would love to do just that.
Hey, well, I agree completely with what you just said, and that's why I support homeschooling enthusiastically. All right, let me ask you a question that probably is rooted in that first book, as I recall, but it's contemporary to this moment. Everywhere I go, I hear people saying that this country is in serious trouble, that it's sliding in a wrong direction, and that if we mess up this next election, we will never come back from it. Now, I can't talk to you about politics and don't want to, but that's the sentiment that's out there. Do you hear it? And do you agree with it?
Yes, I hear it. I do agree with it, and it's something that I cover in my work, The Gathering Storm, because what I ask is a question that I'm sure it's something you all looked at and discussed, and that is, why would God commence the entire Bible with the famous words at the very beginning of Genesis, and the entire world was in chaos and turbulence? That's in the second verse of Genesis. Why would God tell us that the earth was in turbulence, and then the next thing is God created light, and then eventually man is created to work the garden? And the answer is to teach us something very basic. And I'm quite sure, Dr. Dobson, your office isn't afflicted by this, but in my office, here's the weirdest thing. I have to put no work into turning it into a mess. It just happens by itself. I mean, it's incredible. It takes me like a day of concentrated effort to clear my desk, make everything clean, to get everything looking as if it's some reasonable facsimile of structure and order. And then with no effort on my part whatsoever, a month later, it's chaos again. It's the same with children's bedrooms. It works exactly the same way. And what God is teaching us here is that there's something called spiritual gravity. There's something that pulls things towards a state of disorder, chaos, destruction. In the same way that if we were to leave a motor car in a field and watch it for, shall we say, 200 years, when we look at it at the end of 200 years, it'll just be a heap of rust and some broken glass and some decomposing rubber. But if you were to leave some rusty iron and some broken glass and some decomposed rubber in a field, you could leave it there for 100 years or 1,000 years. It'll never reassemble into a car. In other words, the passage of time destroys structure and order. And it's like that as well. People don't realize how much energy was injected into building the United States of America. People don't understand that it was a profound infusion of godly wisdom. If you like, it was the enlightenment of light spoken about at the beginning of Genesis. The very first thing God created was light. That is the structure, the wisdom, the pattern, the interface between physical and spiritual. That's where it all came from. And so you don't actually have to do a whole lot to let a culture and a society slide down to a general state of chaos, disorder, and destructiveness, where all of a sudden even things like national security and economic vitality begin to fade and become dismal echoes of what we all remember them once to have been.
Isn't that principle really more or less representative of the second law of thermodynamics and the law of entropy, which essentially says everything is growing older, everything is burning up, the sun is going out if it takes a billion more years, that disorder is part of the way the universe is designed, and it's part of the curse.
That's exactly right, and it's a curse and yet also a blessing. And of course, yes, it is the law of entropy. It's a thermodynamic principle, the way the scientists look at it, and they're absolutely right. What we add to that, of course, is that it's there's also a challenge. God is putting us in the garden to work that garden. God is putting us here to overcome entropy and to overcome chaos and disorder, and structure the kind of society that was created here in the United States of America by Bible-believing Christians who, during the colonial period, were deeply aware of the permanent principles and the timeless truths to be found in the Torah, and they implemented them to build the society. And as the society has become more secularized, and these timeless truths have been stripped one by one from the culture and made unpopular, to the point where, interestingly enough, we are now in the very first generation in all of human history. Honestly, all of human recorded history, this is the first generation where there are people in America today who consider themselves educated and sophisticated, they really do think that they're educated and sophisticated people, and yet they are utterly and sublimely clueless about the Bible. There's never been people who dared to consider themselves educated and yet were ignoramuses biblically.
How did we get in this mess? I mean, we can all see that something's going wrong, but why now? What's going on right now?
Well, the again, you know, it is the tug of sexuality. It is not an accident that, I mean, almost anybody, and I've done this, and I'm sure you have as well, either on the radio with guests or at personal appearances. I often ask people, I'm not asking you for a precise date or a particular month or even necessarily a particular year, but roughly in your mind, when do you think the deterioration began? Future historians might say that that the big dividing line between a time when American values really meant something and a time that we look today with unconcealed dismay at our own prospects, when do you think that began? Wouldn't you agree that most people sort of say somewhere in the 1960s?
No question in my mind. I lived it. I was there on the university campus.
Yes.
saw what students were trying to sell to the culture, and they largely succeeded at it.
Well, originally and back then in the 60s, perhaps one of the most notable events, and I think its significance can hardly be exaggerated, was the arrival of the birth control tablet in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did for the very first time is it created the possibility of perpetual male adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
It made it possible for the first time for men to really never grow up. And essentially, it transformed masculinity and with all the implications of honor and respect and courage and the ability to defer gratification, everything that we think of as responsible masculinity, got transformed into a very simple question. Did you remember to take your pill, honey?
Hmm. Or use a condom.
Or, yeah, whatever. That's right.
Yeah.
So that, in other words, an assault on family values. It sounds trite when we say it sometimes because we've been made self-conscious, but it's absolutely true. And we see the beginning of that again in arrival of a gentleman in the book of Genesis called Lamech. Who has two wives. First guy ever to come up with the idea of two wives. And ancient Jewish wisdom reveals, like, you know, why two wives? The answer was very simple. One was his main wife, who was a wife for family and company and so on and so forth. And then the second wife was there just for sexual pleasure. That was her role. And that separation of those roles is detailed there right at the beginning of Genesis in order to show to us that everything begins from that.
Mm. Rabbi, you mentioned the decline that can be pointed back to the 60s. Isn't it not true also that prayer in schools was removed in the 60s?
And that's exactly right. And prior to the Supreme Court rulings in that period, it was unthinkable. I mean, nobody ever thought that there was anything problematic. I mean, I know so many Jews of that generation who said, of course we all said prayer in public school. So what? Mm. It was wonderful. It was not a bad thing. And all of a sudden, over just a span of terrifyingly few decades, people have been trained to consider prayer as a violent assault that challenges your rights to what? Secularism? Mm. Afraid so.
Rabbi, when did we decide that this is an assault on people, that we are being harmed because somebody's praying in our vicinity that we can hear, or that we have to be quiet during someone else's prayer? At what point, you know, in our society is all of a sudden I'm being harmed by someone else saying words like that?
Well, here's what I think is so very important, and if I sound hesitant, it's only that I don't want to be unnecessarily provocative or shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Islam provides us with a very good contemporary model of what has been happening. And here's what I mean. During the Islamic invasion of Europe, you know, you remember, you know, Islam came up through North Africa. It spread throughout North Africa and then crossed the Straits of Gibraltar and went through Spain and was well on its way to taking over France as well, and, you know, until Charles Martel stopped them in 632. But what were they doing? What did they do with every single church on the way? They either demolished it or they converted it into a mosque. Mm-hmm. Now, in struggles between religions, that is the sort of thing that happens. It is very normal for most religions in the world to attempt to utterly shatter and obliterate any evidence of other competing religions. Christianity is not like that. Judaism is not like that. Israel is just about the only, it is the only place in the Middle East in which churches and synagogues can be found. So everything makes sense, Ryan, if you just make one little attitudinal adjustment, mm-hmm. and that is you don't see secularism as a sort of benign, comfortable absence of religion. On the contrary, when you see that secularism is actually a very sinister and aggressive religion all on its own, then we understand that it is absolutely vital if you are a secular fundamentalist, and yes, they have real fundamentalists, they have aggressive and even sinister fundamentalists in their faith of secularism. If you are a secular fundamentalist, then yes, you do need to obliterate all evidence of competing religions. And Christianity, of course, is the most conspicuous of the competing religions. And so, obviously, a prayer to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob must be removed from schools. Praying to Jesus Christ, yes, must be stopped and eliminated.
What you're saying here was expressed in some of your work called The Gathering Storm. Now, as I understand it, that was a book, but it was also a CD.
Yes, it was an audio CD set that, and it is still an audio CD set that comes with a study guide, and it's, you know, several hours of me laying this out and explaining everything we're discussing and a whole lot more, because we wanted people to be able to hear it repeatedly in a way that is more easy than having to read through a book. Yeah. And so the Gathering Storm is the place where we show that the entire story of Noah and the flood is not just a piece of primitive history. It's not just a myth and a legend about a long-forgotten family who survived a terrible flood. No, you know, those are myths and legends found in various cultures and histories, but the Bible account of Noah is actually a blueprint of reality. It reveals what happens when we allow the law of entropy to proceed unhindered, when we allow a society to begin to slide through decadence and depravity into oblivion, as we've seen happen with so many other cultures and societies. Watch and study the story of Noah to see exactly what's going on there.
Rabbi, talking about this subject reminds me of a study that I've had in my files for a number of years. It was written by anthropologist J.D. Unwin, who did this investigation, and I made reference to it in one of my books. And let me just read a short paragraph that kind of summarizes the study. It says, "Mankind has known intuitively for many centuries that indiscriminate sexual activity represents both an individual and a corporate threat to survival. The wisdom of those years has now been documented. Anthropologist J.D. Unwin conducted an exhaustive study of the 88 civilizations which have existed in the history of the world. Each culture has reflected a similar life cycle, beginning with a strict code of sexual conduct and ending with the demand for complete freedom to express individual passion. Mm. Unwin reports that every society which extended sexual permissiveness to its people was soon to perish. There have been no exceptions. Mm. Are you aware of this study, and do you agree with it?
I do know that it corresponds precisely to the principles of ancient Jewish wisdom, including pointing out that there is a fascinating sentence, a verse, in the book of Exodus, shortly after the Ten Commandments are given, in which the Bible says the children of Israel cried all that night. Ah. And, of course, the question is, what on earth do they have to cry about? And ancient Jewish wisdom records that the answer handed down from teacher to student over the last 3,000 years is that the Israelites cried that night because of the laws of sexual restraint that the seventh commandment imposed. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. Yes, it's exactly as you said, Dr. Dobson. Societies do tend towards greater sexual freedom. That is what you're going to discover. And there is only one force powerful enough to combat the pull towards sensuality, only one force powerful enough to defeat the compelling urge of rising sap in young adolescent bodies, and that is God's power, the power of faith, and the wisdom of the Bible. When you strip that out of a society, you start off gradually with the violation of sexual mores, which we found during the 60s and 70s. It follows on with abortion, which is, of course, just another way of furthering, if you like, the sexual revolution, and then finds full expression in homosexuality, which is ultimately the freest form of sex there is.
How would your critics defend themselves on that, saying,
I mean,
that,
just conceding for the moment that such creatures exist.
Sure. Right? Yeah. Yes. Exactly. But someone that says, oh, you can't equate, sexual depravity and economic downfall. That just is silly. And, you point out through the ages where that's happened, and they say, well, that's just not plain not true. Do they try to defend it, or do they just ignore?
Well, what they say is, and you're exactly right, what they say is that correspondence isn't causality. So just because you found that in the decline of every society going back to Rome, sexual depravity accompanies economic decline, that doesn't mean that there's a causal link. And then I proceed to explain why there is a causal link. And at its most fundamental and basic, the idea is that an economy depends almost entirely upon controlling of baser instincts. So, for instance, selfishness.
Yeah.
If we can't conquer selfishness, there's not going to be an economy, because in the final analysis, wealth depends upon each and every one of us being obsessively preoccupied with supplying one another's needs and desires.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to do it because you want to get paid never works. You've always got to put it out first before you get paid. That's the whole fundamental idea of credit. And of course, if there is no honesty, then there's not going to be credit. And it's one of the reasons that that there is very little internet commerce in South America. There's almost zero internet commerce in Nigeria, because people spend most of the time, and the majority of people, are busy ripping everyone off. So there is no trust, can't work. So it's very easy to show that, as a matter of fact, sexual depravity is a barometer of a failure of a culture to control its baser instincts.
And with that, unfortunately, we need to jump in and bring this provocative discussion with Rabbi Daniel Lappin to a close for today's program here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Luann, I know many of our listeners are dying to hear more of Rabbi Lappin's opinions on this topic, so be sure to be with us tomorrow for the conclusion of our conversation with him. And if you can't, you can download the podcast or request a CD of both days at drjamesdobson.org.
Where we will also have a link to Rabbi Lappin's website to to find out about more of his best-selling books.
And Luann, before we let our listeners go for today, we do need to bring a request to them. Family Talk is struggling financially right now. We had a great December, and we are so thankful for all of you who donated to our work of helping families. But January has been really tough. And now would be a great time to hear from you if you've been helped by this broadcast.
Or even by your dad's words and writings, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Family Talk is the place where you can access the newest advice and radio broadcasts from our host, Dr. James Dobson. But quite honestly, we do need your help to stay on the air. You can give either when you're at our Facebook page or at drjamesdobson.org.
And if you'd prefer to give over the phone, our phone number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. Thanks for being with us today, and we invite you to be back tomorrow for more with Rabbi Daniel Lappin on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We'll see you then.